We've got 82 projects in the company right now, and so we can get our diversification across commodities instead of across jurisdictions. You make that initial discovery, the market capitalization can improve so dramatically on that initial discovery, because sort of the sky's the limit of how big your deposit can be, right? So it attracts all these investors that are looking at what the potential of what you could have found. And then over the years, as the company drills off the deposit and sort of the blue sky comes off of what things could be, the market sort of finds a value on what the consensus is that's there. In exploration, one of your biggest risks to holding exploration companies longer term is the dilution risk, right? Because you've got to be going to the market every year, issuing more shares to go and do work. But when you look at a company like Strategic Metals, like you go back nearly 20 years, you know, in the last 20 years, I think we've only issued 20 million shares. So that's pretty low dilution when you compare it to basically any other type of explorco in the sector, right? So if you're looking for that exposure to exploration companies over a longer time period, you really don't have the same type of dilution risk when you're dealing with a project generator.
Good day. We have Richard Drexler with Strategic Metals. How are you, Richard?
Doing great today, Steve. Yourself?
Good, not bad. I got a little bit of a better background than you, but where are you right now?
I am based in Vancouver, Canada.
Awesome. Vancouver, Canada, the Mecca. But you've got some projects over in the Yukon. If you can tell us a bit about yourself, and then if you can tell us a bit about what you guys got going on.
Yeah, so myself, I've been working in mineral exploration since about 2007. So fresh out of university, you know, I chased my wife into the Yukon. She's a geologist. So I sort of fell in love with exploration up there and was lucky enough to get myself involved with a team that's been active in Yukon since the 60s. So Archer Catherine Associates, very well-known consulting firm up there. They've been involved in a huge number of discoveries in the Yukon and really have a giant library of data. And really, that's sort of the key to the success that Strategic Metals has had. So Strategic Metals is a company I'm vice president of communications of, and it was sort of formed out of the Archer Catherine databases. And so in I guess the early 2000s, some of the leads of Archer Catherine decided, you know, we've got all this data, we've been working on all these different projects for, you know, all these big oil and gas companies that would do, you know, mineral exploration to offset their oil and gas revenue. And so AC, Archer Catherine, built up this massive database of information on all sorts of targets. And so Strategic Metals was formed basically to take that database and put it in a public vehicle. So we've gone through there and selected the projects that we think are the most attractive and now put those into Strategic Metals. And Strategic Metals operates as an explorer and project generator, but has been active for a few decades now. So it's quite a long life, successful project generator. You know, we focus on the earlier stage targets, and we look to provide our shareholders with as much exposure to the front end of that Lassonde curve as you can. So really, when you see the biggest value creation events in our sector is typically when you go from a greenfield's idea to a brand new discovery. You've got moose pasture, and then all of a sudden you've got a deposit. You go from nothing to something that can be worth billions. And that is really the part of the curve that Strategic Metals focuses on. So, you know, we're finally getting into that part of the cycle again. So it's the perfect time for us to be talking.
Richard, it's a good time. We will get into the Lassonde curve later. I am interested to hear more about where you find the value in that and kind of where you guys are and how you see, how investors can see this opportunity on that curve. But if you can tell us a bit about your jurisdiction as a whole, what kind of projects are you finding, and like how do you determine which projects to bring on? And if you can tell us a bit more about the Yukon in general.
Unique geology. It's it's part of the global ring of fire, right? So that all of the big porphyry systems that are well known in British Columbia and Alaska, like those belts go right through the Yukon. There's huge reduced intrusion style gold deposits that similarly are some famous ones in Alaska, like Fairbanks and whatnot, Fort Knox. The offset of that is also in Yukon, but Yukon has been very underexplored relative to those neighboring jurisdictions. And so in the last, I guess, couple decades, there's been a new wave of exploration has come up into Yukon. We've taken advantage of the multi-element geochem sampling, which is basically large scale soil surveys that you do. But now instead of having to select, you know, one or two elements of interest, you can get 50 or 60 elements in the one analysis. So then you can start to look at all different types of deposits that could be there. And so you ask, well, you know, what type of deposits are we looking for? Well, it spans, right? I mean, we look at ourselves as omnivores. You know, we have, you know, lead zinc targets. We've got silver targets. We have gold targets, copper, tungsten, you know, vanadium, all sorts of things. One of the only things we don't really have in the company is, you know, rare earths or uranium at this point. You know, it's we actually have a big coal deposit as well. We have limestone deposits. We have, you know, all sorts of more industrial metals and materials as well in the company. So it's one of those things where, you know, we're like I said, we're not focused on any one commodity, and we have a huge portfolio of projects. We've got 82 projects in the company right now, and so we can get our diversification across commodities instead of across jurisdictions. So we're focused on the one jurisdiction, and the reason we're there is because of all the proprietary knowledge we have behind us, and we feel that that's our advantage by working in this jurisdiction. And then you get, like I said, the diversification through the metal suite.
So, Richard, you talked about your knowledge of the jurisdiction. Could you tell us a little bit about your team and what kind of knowledge you guys do bring? And then if you can tell us about the jurisdiction itself, how friendly is it? What kind of roadblocks do you run into?
Yeah, I mean, the Yukon often ranks quite high on the Fraser Institute rankings in terms of, you know, the most prospective jurisdictions in the world. I mean, geologic prospectivity is way up there globally. And you know, you've seen mines come into production over the last, you know, we have a couple have come online the last couple decades here. You know, right now there's only one operating mine in Yukon, but there's a couple others that are moving towards production. You know, it's very friendly to exploration. Virtually every road in the Yukon was built for mineral exploration or mineral deposits. You know, it's Yukon's famous for the Klondike gold fields, the big gold rush that came up from California into the Yukon. That brought a lot of infrastructure into the northern parts of Yukon, a lot of roads. But, you know, other than the Alaska Highway that was, you know, built by the U.S. military, it's pretty much every other road was built for mineral deposits. So there's a long history of exploration and mining in the Yukon and quite supportive communities.
So you guys have a lot of relationships built there. You've been there for how many years now?
Well, myself, I started in 2007, but as I mentioned, our group is, you know, sort of spawned out of the Archer Cathro team, and they've been active since the 60s. And Doug Eaton was a principal of Archer Cathro starting in about 81. He's our CEO. He's stepped back from Archer Cathro now that, you know, the subsequent generations have taken over sort of the field operations, and now he's just focused on strategic metals. But, you know, all that wealth of information is still there.
Yeah. So Project Generator, you're an explorer. So in terms of, is it really wrong to think of it as having a flagship project, or did you guys have just a bunch of projects that are mining in different areas in the Yukon that you
talk
about?
Yeah, we don't
about?
Really have a flagship. I mean, from time to time, we will drill a hole on a project if there's nothing else you can practically do from surface to evaluate it, sort of bring it to the next step. But typically what we'll try to do is bring targets, sort of a portfolio of targets up to that drill ready stage. And lots of times we'll go into belts and we'll pick up a whole bunch of targets in a belt and we'll work all those various targets in the belt up to the drill ready stage. And then we look to find partners to do that heavy lifting, to do the drilling. And so one of the models that we've used quite successfully over the years is to take large equity positions in some of these other junior companies that would go out and explore. So oftentimes we'd, you know, vend either one project or a package of projects into a company, take a big share interest as well as a royalty interest. Sometimes there's cash payments along the way, sometimes there's not. It sort of depends on the deal. But that what that does is it when you get into nice markets like this and those other companies are out exploring, it gives our shareholders exposure to, you know, lots of exploration dollars that are being spent without having to put money out of our own treasury. So we can get more and more exposure to more projects sort of as the cycle matures, and then constantly building that royalty portfolio on the back end. So sort of like organic royalty generation as well.
I love it. Richard, you mentioned the Lassonde curve earlier, and you seem to target certain projects that have a lot of upside. If you can tell us a bit about how you guys find those projects. And you know, if you can, for people who don't know what Lassonde curve is, if you can tell us how that comes into play for investors, as well as not only for the projects that you bring on, but like as a whole, where are you guys on the Lassonde curve, if that is a way to think about it?
Yeah, so I guess strategic metals, based on the fact that we have big shareholdings in a lot of now more mature assets because we've been doing this for so long, we almost fit in a couple different spots. Where so basically the Lassonde curve was a curve of sort of relative valuation that Pierre Lassonde, famous from chairman of Franco Nevada, biggest company in our sector, and it's a curve that he came up with, and it showed that basically at early stage, when you've got just a concept, your company's not valued at much. You make that initial discovery, the market capitalization can improve so dramatically on that initial discovery, because sort of the sky's the limit of how big your deposit can be, right? So it attracts all these investors that are looking at what the potential of what you could have found. And then over the years, as the company drills off the deposit and sort of the blue sky comes off of what things could be, the market sort of finds a value on what the consensus is that's there. And then as the company goes through its engineering and permitting and whatnot, there's not, even though there's true value creation, the market often doesn't recognize that. So the next time you typically as a shareholder would get another re-rate would be after all that engineering and permitting work is done, which sometimes takes 5 to 10 years. And then you go into production and you start to ramp up towards the cash flow. And then you see another big wave of value creation. And so there's sort of those two ideal spots for investors to be positioned in this sector, right ahead of those two inflection points. And so one of them, like I said, is on discovery. So we have a lot of targets that don't have resources on them that are in our portfolio, but some of them have, some initial drill holes or have a really nice showing with good surface samples. And what we're looking to do is find partners to come in and do some of those initial drill tests to prove that, hey, this could be a deposit. That's where they get that sort of that explosive growth. And then on the other end, with the more mature assets, we have exposure to that second up leg on the Lassonde curve with some of our large shareholdings. So one of them is Rockhaven Resources, where we've got about a 30% interest. They've defined one of the highest grade, greater than 1 million ounce gold deposits ever found in Yukon. It's on a road. They've got over 1 million ounces of gold, over 30 million ounces of silver. It's a series of high grade veins that come right to surface. They're all still open at depth and along strike. I mean, they spent a bunch of years expanding it. And, the last time they did an economic study on it was their sensitivity in their economic study only went up to 1740 gold. And at 1740, their after-tax NPV was north of $500 million on that study. And so, you can only imagine where things might be if they update their economics here at today's prices. But anyways, they're in sort of over the last 5-10 years, they've been in that dead spot on the Lassonde curve where they're doing a lot of work on metallurgy and permitting and sequencing studies for their eventual mine design and more advanced feasibility work. And so the market sort of abandoned them. But now we're getting into that point where, again, they're pushing towards, getting some of those permits to get to that, next phase of development. And so you're starting to see a little bit of more excitement there. Another advanced stage asset where we've got big exposure is through Broden Mining. This is still private, whereas Rockhaven's public. The Broden Mining, we have similarly about a 30% interest. And that was a purpose-built vehicle where we partnered with the Ross River Denny Council, which is the First Nation based on the Ross River. And they're right near the town of Farrell in Yukon. And so Farrell was a town that was built for a series of high-grade lead-zinc deposits, a series of these SEDEX deposits. And it was historically mined back in the 70s and 80s. And then it went into receivership due to a period of low metal prices. And so we've gone back to the local First Nations there and the federal government and got agreements in place to basically redevelop a lot of the deposits that are at the Farrell mine site. And so there's a huge amount of resource already defined there, north of 5 billion pounds of lead zinc, over 100 million ounces of silver. And so at today's metal prices, and with modern metallurgy, we think there's these deposits are going to be incredibly robust. And so we're working through getting the last agreements in place to really push this project forward. And that'll be, pretty much they've got a PEA, preliminary economic assessment, already ready to go once these formal agreements are signed. And then they'll be pushing right into the pre-feasibility and that advanced work to try to get this back in production. Because one of the deposits, one of the series of deposits that will be going into Broden mining was actually mined for about 18 months, but it has a 10-year mine life already outlined on it, you know, over 400 drill holes into the thing. And so it's very advanced stage assets. There's already, like I said, a town was built for these mines. There's power lines right to it. You know, a bridge over the river was built. So, you know, very attractive situation. It's been one of those things where we've been spending sort of the last decade trying to get it out of the federal government, because it's basically been in receivership in a reclamation, having reclamation programs done to it year after year. And so it was our thinking, you know, we were working to the north of there, a number of years ago, and finding big silver deposits in a parallel trend to all the deposits known at Faro, and decided, you know, like if we're going to get this whole district revitalized, like the best way to do it is going to be to clean up the legacy mess at Faro. And the only way to do that is basically to restart the mining operation, so you can start reprocessing a lot of the waste rock that's the current issue for the remediation. And so you sort of been a decade in the works, but we're pushing that forward quite aggressively, and we're anticipating some news out of that later this year. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with a 30% interest in that, I mean, there's definitely a lot of publicly available information in terms of the amount of metal that's already in resource defined at those deposits. So, you know, we think that just our shareholding in our percentage shareholding in that should be worth more than our current market cap, you know, given the current metal prices. So, you know, lots of upside here for strategic. And that's, so when we step back a bit, and the other day I totaled up a lot of these shareholdings we have in other companies, because, you know, aside from our 8,200% held projects, a lot of the value is these sort of retained retained share interest that we have in other companies. And those, as of a couple of days ago, totaled $43 million versus our $30 million market cap. You know, so you're getting all of our projects and all of our experience and everything for free, all of our royalties. You know, we have a growing royalty portfolio. We now have 16 royalty interests. Every time we do a deal, we'll be adding to those. And so none of those royalties are in production, but they're definitely like blue sky in the future.
So, Richard, if you can tell me how off I am about my initial reading or assessment on this, it seems like you guys you're targeting Lassonde Curve ready, like the high potential projects. It seems like you're mitigating risk by putting a lot of the work stuff on and the expenses on other companies, but you got high upside with the stake in the game. Is this the right way to think about it? Because when I think of this isn't exactly a gold play, this isn't a, you know, tungsten play, but it is, and it is. It's like it kind of like the whole omnivore thing you mentioned. It almost seems like it mitigates the risk, but with the high upside that you have with the Lassonde curve targeting, it seems like low risk, high reward. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and really in exploration, one of your biggest risks to holding exploration companies longer term is the dilution risk, right? Because you've got to be going to the market every year, issuing more shares to go and do work. But when you look at a company like Strategic Metals, like you go back nearly 20 years, you know, in the last 20 years, I think we've only issued 20 million shares. So that's pretty low dilution when you compare it to basically any other type of explorco in the sector, right? So if you're looking for that exposure to exploration companies over a longer time period, you really don't have the same type of dilution risk when you're dealing with a project generator, just because our business model is different. And you know, we're looking to basically push that dilution risk off to our partners, and then, you know, you don't have the same amount of upside, right? You're giving them a bigger percentage upside on some of the targets, but, you know, you're sharing it amongst a lot more targets. And so our goal, you know, as we get into the point where, you know, some of these juniors that are pre-resource are now finally starting to get financing. And, you know, you haven't really seen that for the last decade. You know, it's just been more advanced projects where the only guys were able to attract money. And so now you're seeing more early stage concepts getting funded. That's really the sweet spot for strategic, because like that's where all of our bread and butter is. That's where all of our key assets are sort of fit that stage. And so what we're looking to do is get as many of these projects in play over the next few years as possible, just to give our shareholders, you know, as much exposure to new discoveries as possible. And you really don't need that to make a whole pile of new discoveries to see the huge appreciation. And in the last cycle, for example, we had about a 10 to 12% share interest in another one of our group companies that made a major discovery in Yukon. You know, their stock went to $1 billion market cap. And so, you know, all of a sudden our stock was up from around, you know, 30 cents where we are now, went up to over $4 in that last cycle. And so, you know, it's that kind of leverage is definitely possible later in the cycle with the project generators.
Richard, you mentioned share structure. If you can tell us about your, how many shares fully diluted, how many options, or I mean, what are the options and warrants written in it? And then if you can tell us about insiders, institutions, and what percentage
that. So we don't finance very often, keep based on the business model. So we don't have any warrants outstanding. Okay. We've got about 110 million shares out. And as I mentioned, when I looked that up, 2015, 2016, we were around 90 million. So like I said, in the last decade, you know, roughly only 20 million shares of extra stock has come out. We've got less than the 10% allowable option. So we're sitting at about 120 million shares fully diluted. Insiders and management hold just under 9%. And then there's a fund out of Dallas, Condire Resource Partners. They've got about 17 to 18%. And they've got a representative on our board of directors as well, who's been a longtime director. And so Condire, they've, you know, a key shareholder of ours. And over the years, we've done various spin outs and distributions to shareholders. And so Condire has participated in those moving forward as well. So yeah, great group to be involved with. I guess that's another thing that sort of sets us apart is since 2008, our company has done three distributions. So sometimes when we don't find the right partner to do a deal with, we'll package up some of our projects, put it in a new company, and just dividend all those shares of the new company out to our shareholders. And we've done that three times since 2008. Total deemed value of the distributions around 20 million. I think each distribution is traded at a multiple of the deemed value at some point during its life. But so it's, you know, there's lots of ways to win on strategic, especially when you're looking at it at the current valuation.
Richard, finding the model to be a fascinating, I've seen it before, but it seems like a very low risk, high upside play, and look forward to following your story. Richard, if you'd be so kind as to tell us your ticker, your website, how people can reach you or learn more about Strategic.
Yeah, sure. So our website is strategicmetalsltd.com, and we're on Twitter is the TSXV SMD. We're listed on the Venture Exchange as SMD. And the OTC, the pink sheets, I think, SMDZF, if you're in the States.
All right, Richard. Well, great to meet you. And thanks for your time.
It's a pleasure meeting you. Thank you very much for your time.